Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network, and I am joined, as always, here on the final day of the transfer portal. We've made it through. Tracy Pearson, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. It is last day, transfer portal open. The window closes at 9 o'clock. I've just timed out a nice little cough and cold for this entire window opening. So it's been blessed.
It's been a blessed time for all of us. It's been a blessed time for UCLA football. The total transfers as of this moment, and we're kind of thinking this is fairly close to final. There might be, you know, one or two more, but this is pretty close here. Is 39 actual transfers, an additional JC transfer in Michael McDonald. Well, actually, two additional JC transfers in Michael McDonald and Gavin Blum for a total of 41 additions from the beginning of the window to the end. As we've pointed out several times, though the window to enter has closed as of 9 p.m. tonight, there's still the possibility of adding players who have entered and haven't yet found a home over the next really however long. The problem is, as you get further and further away from the start of the quarter, the reality is that anybody else that UCLA would add, I don't know, towards the end of this month would probably be an enrollee for spring quarter, not for winter quarter.
So, generally, it's two. They can get someone in, sneak them into a quarter 2 weeks after classes started, and I think that's this week.
Yeah, we're hitting it right now. So there's been a lot that – so we last recorded last Thursday. Since that, Tracy and I just did the count. There have been 25 new commitments since then. Some of the highlights
– have you been busy, Dave?
I think it was Saturday where my brain actually turned to liquid.
I like the one poster who said something like, wow, you guys have a lot of commitment analyses ahead of you. Yeah. And by the way, we're at 20 and we got 21 to go.
We're almost halfway done. Woohoo! There have been a lot of like big time commitments. If you can remember as far back as Sahir West, that was after we last recorded. But that was obviously a big one, probably for my money, the biggest one of this class so far. But there have been a number. I mean, Brian Rowe committed.
Wide receiver from South Carolina.
Yeah, from South Carolina. We'll talk all about all these guys. But Maxwell Roy, the Ohio State defensive lineman. Sammy Omosigo, the Oklahoma linebacker. There have been just so many guys that like...
Hey, Dave, there was a defensive lineman from Rutgers, too.
Yes, you want me? You want? Okay, yeah, I'll take it. Darold, I'm going to go with Dinyohi.
We can go Dengohi.
I'm going Dinyohi just because you got that capital N. I'm assuming there's some kind of French influence here. I'm going to say that G is like weird and silent.
Yeah. Sorry, I just completely ambushed you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that about you.
Carter Swayze. See, I can do that one nice and easy.
Carter Swayze. Yeah. But what if that's Sweezy? You don't know.
Or it could be Sweezy. We probably got Dinyohi and we mangled Sweezy.
But there are so many guys here, Tracy. And the thing is, like, Tao Johnson might end up being the best player in this entire group. You know, like, you just don't know exactly how this is all going to shake out and who we should be totally excited about. Who's like, oh, that's a nice get. But there have been so many commitments. This roster, just broadly speaking, this roster is going to be almost wholly and completely different from what you experienced last year. I'm thinking mostly for good. I guess there could be some for ill, but the main thing is it's been a complete, turnover. There's between the transfers and the high school incoming players, there's, 57. I mean, what are we talking here? 57 new players?
57. And we remember, Dave, back in the day, 3 weeks ago, we said they'd top out at 60 new players. So we're pretty close, and they might add three more.
They might. I mean, there's still a chance. We've heard it slowed down, though, considerably. So we wouldn't, we wouldn't think it's going to be a lot more, but it could be a couple more.
They could add some high school players by the signing day in February.
Absolutely. And there's always kind of some weird late situations that develop. So,
and grad transfers can enter at any time.
Yep.
There might be that. And then Indiana, Miami players can still enter 5 days after your participation in the college football playoffs.
Yeah. So there's still like potential movement here that's worth keeping an eye on. But we want to, once again, we're going to go through kind of this whole depth chart because, again, the situation has changed at a lot of these positions even since we last spoke.
Dramatically, also, 25 new players.
Well, because in addition to this, there's also been some roster changes, many of which we reported yesterday, but Garrison Blank into the portal, redshirt freshman offensive lineman, tight end Jake Renda into the portal, defensive back Jameer Johnson into the portal, offensive lineman Noah Pulialii exhausting his eligibility. He actually did get in some games this year. I don't want to keep denigrating the young man. He played in three games on special teams this year.
Yep. He wasn't the – who was the – I always forget his name. The offensive lineman who went all 5 years.
God, what was his name?
Brandon. I'm texting Brandon right now.
We need Brandon. Oh, who was it? It was it's on the tip of my tongue.
Me too. Sean? No.
No, it wasn't Scheller. But it was – I think it was that same era.
Yeah. Watch. I texted Brandon. Time this.
Let's see if he can do it these days.
If he's not distracted, there aren't even three. He's doing something else.
Oh, God. It's right there.
You know, the majority of the people who are listening right now know, and they're saying, you guys are idiots.
We don't remember stuff like this. It's a sad.
I have an excuse. I'm 65, dude.
I've never ever remembered any of this stuff. Damn.
That's why we have Brandon.
Damn.
He remembers everything.
Anywho. So there's been some movement out, and obviously a lot more movement in. So we wanted to go through it again, and we're going to start with offense, go to defense, but let's start with I think what you and I consider the most critical part of the offense, the offensive line. The additions since last we spoke, I'm going to try to get this right, but who knows if I can remember. The additions since last we spoke are Eastern Michigan tackle Mac Indestad, JMU guard Carter Swayze, Harvard offensive lineman Derek Osman, and ASU guard Sean Na'a. Was Michael McDonald in yet? I don't think he was. So also JC offensive lineman Michael McDonald. So what UCLA is working with, just the broad strokes overview, is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 new offensive linemen from the transfer ranks. And then in addition to that, 1, 2, 3 new offensive linemen from the freshman ranks. So they are really only returning 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 offensive linemen. They're bringing in more offensive linemen than they are returning.
Yeah. They're at about, they're at 20 right now. We'll see if everyone on this list actually returns to the program. But right now they're at 20. Conventionally, you know, historically, the theory is that you carry 15 scholarship offensive linemen. I've always wanted to go way more than that. I think it's worth dedicating. I thought back in the day when scholarships meant something, it was worth carrying more just because it's such a iffy proposition to get offensive linemen that hit and can play and contribute. I like that they're carrying 20, especially given this situation, Dave, because I mean, I like our little depth chart. We put some time into it, and you and I think about it, but this sucker could just be way off.
Oh, I mean, yeah. So, like...
Okay, what time? How long was that?
3 minutes.
Andy Keen,
that's what it was. Wow, what a poll. That's insane.
He's listing a bunch. Andy Keen... Nah, he said Noah Pulialii, and he's wrong because
he played in three games. All right.
John Lopez?
John Lopez didn't
I thought he
play, played. But I want to say he retired early. He might have played.
Kwasi Kwala
definitely played. He just didn't play much.
It was Andy Kane, I think, that went
Andy
5 Kane,
years. 100%. That's 100% correct.
Why not just put him in a... Okay, let's not talk. I always had a... Just put him in a game on special teams. Never played.
Must have rubbed somebody really wrong.
Anyway, back to this little group. I was saying, let's... Coach Chesney, if we could make one request, please put the names on practice jerseys for spring. So, because this is going to be hellish of us trying to identify all of, we will spend our time looking down at a roster and not be able to watch practice. Or one of us will be going number 70 and the other one will just be looking at the roster the whole time. I think with this offensive line, they took some guys that they kind of have semi-earmarked for some positions, but they're going to try them out. It's going to be get out there on the field and let's see how you look and where you fit. Someone like Derek Osmond, the transfer from Harvard. He played mostly right tackle for Harvard this year. We heard he's going to get a look at center. He's a guy, he's the size wise, he's probably a little undersized for playing tackle at P4. He could probably play some center and some guard. I mean, he's had position versatility at Harvard. He's played various positions. So, hey, Derek, why don't you try center today? You know, it's going to be one of those things. A number of guys.
I think Riley Robel is also going to get a try there. I mean, I think it's interesting, the Sam Yoon situation, because I would argue he wasn't great this year and also a lot of issues with the snaps.
What was weird with him? Remember the beginning of the year, everyone on this team looked bad and he did not look good. And then when they had that little renaissance, you and I would rewatch the game and go, Sam Yoon was pretty good.
Yeah.
Remember? And then he kind of went back. The snaps weren't good throughout.
Yeah.
The season.
He had a stretch of okay play.
Yeah. I think Sean Na, the transfer from ASU, we haven't slotted it at right guard, but I think he'll get a chance at center. I think center's going to be a really competitive position.
Well, and right now we have Mac Indestad as the left tackle right now.
Yeah.
That's really just – that is us surrendering to the fates. We have no friggin' idea where Mac Indestad is going to slot in. Mac Indestad has no idea where he's going to slot in. Because Hall Schmidt, we have him locked in as the starting right tackle right now. They might decide that they want Hall Schmidt as their left tackle. There isn't an obvious left tackle like your traditional, like, super agile pass protector type in this group that we see. Like, I mean, I guess maybe Jensen Somerville can develop into that.
The other note here is we know that Jalen Jeffers is still with the program. So that means more than likely he's back next season. I would just have to think at this point he has some indication that he can return. He gets another year of eligibility and he returns from his injury. Dave, what was his injury?
It was a season ender, ACL. I don't know.
The year before, he didn't even, I mean, he never even put on a uniform all last year. He just stood on the sideline. So
he hasn't played since 2023.
Yeah. Oh, he played in 2024, didn't he?
No.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. He played in 6 games in 2023.
Okay. He showed flashes of, I mean, in any other depth chart of being a solid backup. But there were times in that year where we thought he was the best left tackle, if you remember. I know that's kind of desperation what we're talking here, but keep him involved. Let's just say it. I think they've done a really good job recruiting the transfer portal. There is no standout left tackle transfer. And I think they're still open to trying to find one. I think that would be right now. I would say that's the thing where they didn't quite do well enough in the transfer portal.
I'm not ready to say that because I don't know. Like all cards on the table. I didn't watch a lot of Eastern Michigan football this year, guys.
Jeez,
I know. I'm sorry, but I didn't. I didn't watch much Harvard football this year. Like, yeah, he played right tackle. I don't know. He's 6'4", 305, so that doesn't look like a left tackle to me, but okay.
The thing is, though, where these guys came from and how much time they got there, when it's off, okay, a wide receiver or a running back can, like, let's say, be the backup at Eastern Michigan, and but show some real flashes and then come to UCLA and maybe step up, you know, and get more carries. When you're an offensive lineman and you're in your fourth or fifth year and you're at Harvard or Eastern Michigan, and you, this is the amount of time you played there. I think you said Mac Endes said, how many games did he start?
Four this year. I think he got hurt, though. He played in five games, starting in four.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's a big stretch from that level of play to be a left tackle. You can maybe get away with a right tackle. But the other point you made, you've made a couple of times, this is going to be a run-heavy offense, we believe. You don't necessarily need that NFL left tackle to protect the quarterback's blind spot on passing downs.
Yeah, no, that's 100% true. If, you know, if they are going to go run-heavy, I mean, you still need, like, good tackles, but you can get by without having, you know, a Jonathan Ogden at left tackle. There are a lot of new bodies here. I think there's going to be a lot of, you know, that classic, who are our best five? And so you might end up with guard types at tackle. And yeah, is that ideal? No. But I do think they've upgraded the overall talent picture of the offensive line considerably. And so if you end up with somebody like Hall Schmidt starting at left tackle, in an ideal world, is that your starting left tackle? No. Probably not. But can you make it work, you know, as, you know, if you've got, if you have, you know, two or three starting right tackle level players and a good amount of, I would say, playable guards, you can probably figure out a way to make it work where you don't need that classic pass protector at left tackle. It won't be ideal, but you can do it.
Here's something I'll make you kind of cry, and I just got to bring it up. Nicky Prongos, like, emerged as probably Stanford's best offensive lineman last year. He's returning again for Stanford, where we saw that little tweet where he's projected maybe of being an NFL draft pick in a year. Plug him into left tackle here, and I think that right there, you've got a real offensive line, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I shouldn't have done that, but I did.
Yeah, but I do think the Nicky Prongo story is instructive in some ways, because one guy, and I'll just say this, one guy I'm kind of intrigued by, and we've got him slotted as a backup guard right now. J.D. Rayner, watching him in his high school tape, he was a transition from tight end to tackle. Guy moves really, 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 really well. Like, he's got really good feet. And yeah, he's added some weight since that film. He's probably put on 20, 25 pounds. And so you don't know. But, like, having watched a lot of, you know, bigger kids move, he looked like a type who can move at that weight, probably can move at the next weight too. He's one that, you know, in that kind of offensive linemen develop at different rates, yada, yada, yada. He's one to keep an eye on. As a potential player down the road, maybe not this year, but as somebody who could maybe fit in at tackle if he continues to maintain that athleticism.
Hey, I got a out of the box idea. The best athlete and probably the best NFL prospect on this list is Eugene Brooks. He's got good feet. He's quick. I know he's really good inside against as a run blocker, but how about move him to left tackle? He's at 340. Get him down to like 325.
Yeah.
I mean, for his NFL prospects to show that he can play both positions and do what, you got the quickness to play left tackle in college, project as a guard in the NFL. Damn, that would do well for his NFL stock. That would be my guy. I mean, isn't he the best athlete, best NFL prospect on this depth chart right now?
For my money, yeah. No, that would make total sense. And the thing is, they've taken so many guard types. I mean, the thing is, I mean, Eugene Brooks, is he a tackle in real life? No, no. But on this team next year, it might make sense.
Yeah. And you've got two guys who came with you from James Madison in Carter Sweezy and Riley Rebel, who can plug in really easy to guard spots, who know, you know, this whole scheme well. Wow, I just came up with a good idea.
Let's go.
Let's all go. Right.
Okay, Eugene Brooks, starting left tackle. But yeah, I mean, this group, I think you'd agree, significant upgrade in overall talent level. It's just kind of, where do these pieces fit? And that's the question right now. But this will be a more talented offensive line than it was last year. I know that's kind of faint praise, not really praise, but it's a faint assessment. But I think that's the best we can do at this point.
And we might be just underestimating, like, I know it's a jump, but Riley Rebel and Carter Sweezy were part of a very good James Madison offensive line. Just if you watch them and take them and plug them in, like I watched them against Oregon in Louisville, that's a couple of solid guys, I think,
yeah,
that really help and that know the system, know Coach, know the whole offensive blocking scheme, understand the whole thing. I think they'll be key.
And I'll just say this. We're quibbling about whether or not they have a left tackle. They didn't have a left tackle or a right tackle this year. So this is, they've upgraded because they have a tackle now. It's just, yeah, whether they have a left one too. All right, moving on. Quarterback, one big change from the last time we recorded is that they brought in Cal Poly backup quarterback, or Cal Poly starting quarterback, Ty Dieffenbach. As the starter. I think we knew about that last time we recorded, that it was going to happen, but then it did happen. So good to have
good,
it back.
Good addition. I mean, I think Madden Iamaliava is probably going to be number two, but great. You needed one more depth. He went to Pitt, didn't he?
Yeah, he was at Pitt and then he went to Cal Poly after.
Right. And I mean, it's a good fit for him. He's a redshirt junior next year. Nico leaves after a year. He'll have, opportunity to compete to start next year after that. So that's, I have to admit I need to go look at tape of him, but I, given who he is and his stats and where, I think that's a good fit there.
Yeah. We don't need to belabor that one. On to running back, I don't think has changed since the last time we recorded. Wayne Knight, I think, was already in at that point. So we don't need to hammer this one too much, but again, they've got seven bodies right now. We haven't heard anything to indicate that Anthony Woods or Javian Thomas is leaving.
Got about 12 hours counting down.
Yeah. Carson Cox, that's a big one for me. Has not been any word. We haven't heard anything on Isaiah Carlson, and the additions obviously are Wayne Knight, Dylan Lee, and then freshman Jaden Fox.
And we'll put it this way on Woods and Thomas. If they entered the portal, that would be a departure from what we've been. We're not saying it's not going to happen. Anything could happen, you know, here at the end.
Yeah.
But it would be a departure from what we're hearing. Right.
Yeah.
Now.
The latest we heard on them is that they should be sticking around.
Yeah.
All right. On to receiver, which is probably the position group. I'm going to say probably the one I'm most excited about.
Me too.
Heading into next year. Because I do think there's been really, they've upgraded in so many different ways that I think it's kind of exciting to dive into it all. But the additions from the transfer portal are San Jose State receiver Leland Smith, who Tracy has a crush on.
I do.
Florida receiver Aiden Mizell. JMU receiver Landon Ellis. Washington receiver Marcus Harris.
Who Dave has a crush on.
Landon Ellis, yes, very much, yeah. So. South Carolina receiver Brian Rowe and Michigan receiver Samaj Morgan. They're also going to be freshman incoming players. Marcus Keir, Major Pride, and Kenneth Moore. The only holdovers right now are Mikey Matthews, Shane Rosenthal, Carson Gordon, who's coming off an injury, Jonas Smith, who's also coming off an injury, and pretty sure redshirted this year. We're going to find out if it's a gray shirt.
It's hard to even know his status right now. Remember, he was hurt in high school, so he came in a year early so he could get
treatment
at UCLA.
Yeah, and then Jace Brown. So it's a more or less wholly changed receiving core. But I think based on what we've kind of gleaned from what we know of these guys, significantly upgraded receiving core.
I'll tell you, it kind of hits on everything you want from a receivers group. You've got your big guy at 6'4" who can go up and get a ball like in the end zone, but also a really good possession. Actually, I'll talk about Leland Smith more in a minute. You got your guy who's fast, who can beat you deep in Mizell, possession receiver in Landon Ellis. And then, I mean, Mikey Matthews, if he doesn't go in the portal today, and I'm not saying he will, we don't know, to stay when UCLA has committed Brian Rowe, South Carolina transfer receiver, and Samaj Morgan, a veteran slot receiver from Michigan. I mean, I give him credit that he's staying. Mikey Matthews was okay this last year, but damn, that position, you will have at least three former starters in the Big Ten and the SEC competing for that spot.
Yep.
Wow. And you're a big Brian Rowe fan.
I am. Well, I think there's something, I don't mean to denigrate anybody who's doing rankings, but he was a 4-star and rated a 91 out of high school.
Okay, high school for him. 4-star, 91, high school.
High school for him ended about 8 months ago. Okay? He played he had a true freshman year at South Carolina. Did he redshirt in that year, Tracy?
No.
No.
And what conference is that in?
That's in the SEC. And in
South Carolina is a good program.
Uh-huh. And in that year where he, you know, played as a true freshman, he started games. He played in 11 of 12 games and 4 starts. And was, you know, reasonably productive, had 19 catches last year. So why did his ranking go from 4-star 91 as a high school senior 8-9 months ago to now a 3-star 87 in the transfer ranking?
And why that makes no sense to me is these ratings and stars, these are projections as a college player. Even if you're a 4-star and you redshirt, you shouldn't lose your rating.
The same thing happened to Eugene Brooks, and then Eugene Brooks was the best offensive lineman for UCLA last year.
Right. It makes no sense. It doesn't seem to. Yeah, I mean, it's a tough job. Imagine
I
evaluating the thousands of guys who've gone in. I get it. But we can nitpick and cherry pick the UCLA guys. But yeah, that one doesn't make sense.
No. So anyway, Brian Rowe, quick, really good athlete, was a track and field guy in high school, like kind of classic slot stuff. He's about 5'10", 170, but quick, very quick. And he's a sophomore, a true sophomore. I like him a lot. I like Landon Ellis a lot. Even just like watching the JMU game against Oregon, like the initial thing is, oh, that's Jordan Payton. Like, it just is. He's like about the same size. He's a big, solid guy, but he's also like got a little bit of, I would say, straight line speed to him. He's not, I wouldn't describe him as super quick, but he can move and he can get past the corner if he needs to. And he's got really strong hands. Kind of a classic, I would say, like a pseudo possession guy, but just, I would describe him as a physical receiver. And I think that's a great fit to kind of pair with, I think, your favorite guy, Leland Smith.
Yeah. You know, I watched, we try to take some time and watch some tape when we do those commitment analyses. And most of the time, you know, we can get a good sense. I got to admit, with Leland Smith, I watched some highlights. I go, you know, I want to go watch a game now. And I was impressed. I mean, let's just take, we know what level they're playing in, Mountain West. I get it, at San Jose State. But He is a big kid. He's 6'4", he's 215. He looked different on the field. He looked like an older, bigger guy compared to everyone they were playing against. It was easy. He just does a nice little dig. They throw him the ball. He gets 12 yards there. And I'm all, why are they playing off him that much? And I guess if you press him, he's just going to shove you by. And he has enough burst and speed to go over the top. He had a lot of passes. He's just not a 6'4" within 15 yards guy. They went deep with him quite a bit. Not only because he has decent speed for his size, but he's so strong, he can just fight people off for the ball. He's very impressive. He's definitely, in my mind, a P4 receiver. So, I really like that addition there. And then Aiden Mizell, you did some research on him.
Yeah, also fast as hell. I would say with Mizell, the big question mark is health. He's been dinged up, like going back to the beginning of his senior year of high school. He hasn't really had a fully healthy year. Even this year, I would say it was, relatively healthy, but I think he was still limited to 8 or 9 games. That often seems kind of common with guys who are super fast, but that they end up with like just kind of, I think it's really important when you're kind of that explosive that you have to do all the other stuff right, like all the treatment stuff, because I think if anything, you're moving your body too fast and things explode. That's my theory as somebody who's never moved fast in my life. If healthy, he could compete to start. It's a weird thing to say about a guy who's a redshirt junior now, but he's still got a lot of upside. Because even with all the injuries, when you watched him this year, still all the speed is there. It's all still there. A lot of times when guys have, essentially 3 straight years of getting dinged up constantly, they lose a step. He really hasn't. And so if he's able to stay healthy, he could suddenly blossom into an 800 to 1,000 yard receiver. It's just, he hasn't quite been able to do it, but that's absolutely a guy you take a flyer on because, okay, say you get top end speed for 8 games this year, right? I mean, even if Leland Smith is, all world and Landon Ellis is handling things and Brian Rowe's really good, like just handing it to him on like a jet sweep and letting him go crazy. You can always use speed. And I think Mizell still has that in droves. And if he stays healthy, it's a great upside play.
So I think if we're talking rankings, is he a 4-star transfer?
He's the one who would make sense to have downgraded since high school, but they haven't. He's still a 4-star. And it's just like, he's been in college. I mean, this is going to be his 4th year of college, and it's not his fault, but he's been hurt a lot. And so he hasn't really produced. So how is he still a 4-star?
They did downgrade him from rated of a 95 to a 90.
But 92, isn't it 92 to a 90?
It says high school 95, 2.8, and now tackle.
That's because that's still a holdover from the composite. 247 has it as a 93.
Let me click on him. They got him as a 90. 24/7 had him as a 92. So a little bit of a downgrade.
Yeah.
But I see this as Smith and Ellis probably being the real consistent guys who are on the field a lot, along with whoever wins the slot position. And Mizell is a guy who's in the rotation who is the big game, big playmaker. That can probably continue to earn more playing time as the season goes on. This is going to be so much fun to watch in spring. And then there's one other transfer, Samaj Morgan, and I watched him a lot. Three very, pretty productive seasons at Michigan. He didn't play that much this year. He started at the beginning of the year in 2025, and then his usage kind of fell off. But a solid slot receiver. He's kind of smallish, 5'10", 175.
Hands are a little bit of an issue.
Yeah. He's able, when he catches it, he's bigger. He's stronger than he looks. He's a good downfield blocker. They tried to, they did some jet sweeps, then some swings and stuff like that to try to get him out in space. He's also a punt and kickoff returner. So yeah.
Yeah. And then there's also Marcus Harris from Washington. He didn't, I don't think he played much. I think he might've gotten into one game this year at Washington. Yeah. He got into the LA Bowl, but he didn't play. So he redshirted. He was a class of 25 guy as well. He's coming in former modern day. Take him. What the hell not? And see how that ends up. But there's no real way of projecting him at this point. So, yeah, they've added, I would say, young depth with a guy like Marcus Harris. They've added productive college players, and they've added some upside guys. That's exactly what you wanted, and they've done that. So receiving core, upgrade significantly.
Yes.
Tight end. Since we last spoke, I believe they added both Stevie Amar and Braden Lofton. They'd already added Josh Pfeiffer. So I would say the top end of this depth chart has changed, because I think we're both anticipating that Braden Lofton is going to pair with Josh Pfeiffer as kind of the starting tight ends. Braden Lofton comes from, I believe, Kansas State, where he was a starter this year and was productive in 2024. Yeah, this year he had, or actually, no, it was a starter last year and then productive this year. He was 11 catches for 125 yards last year, 6 catches for 55 yards this year. So I think the hope would be that he would provide something similar. And then there's also obviously young tight ends in the depth chart in Noah Fox Flores, Dylan Sims, who Noah Fox Flores actually ended up playing quite a bit this year.
He had a few catches. Oh no, he had one catch. I think one catch for a touchdown.
I think so.
Yeah.
So anyway, they've got some pieces here that can be that can also upgrade. I think Josh Pfeiffer is more of a blocking guy. Braden Lofton's little bit more of a receiver type, but also I think there's room for Noah Fox Flores to jump into the starting two as well.
Yeah. One thing I think that we've only talked about a little since we've gone on the depth chart in terms of their transfer portal recruiting, they're obviously looking for guys who can plug in and play next year, but they've done pretty well in getting some guys, some younger guys, probably at a pretty good NIL discount that might project. Like we're talking, when we talked Marcus Harris, redshirt freshman next year, has some athleticism, I think absolutely can play at this level. Those are the kind of guys. Brian Rowe is going to be a true sophomore. So, you know, they've done well at that, bringing in those kind of guys. I just wanted to note as we kept going down that talking about longer term depth, just not the guys who can play next season. Tight end. There isn't a go-to. They missed on Dorian Thomas, who would have been the go-to catching tight end. Josh Pfeiffer is a blocking tight end, does it really well. I mean, he's got a little bit of a narrow frame, like for an offensive lineman, but if it was a little bit wider, he very much could be a very good offensive end, offensive lineman and offensive tackle. Braden Lofton, I watched a little bit of. I liked him. I'm seriously think from what I've seen him more and watched him, but Noah Fox Flores, in what we saw of him as a true freshman, I think has a chance to step into more of a role next year. I don't think Stevie Amar, the transfer from Boston College, I think he's like what I just laid the groundwork for this. He's more of a longer term play. I'd be kind of surprised if he really got into the rotation this year. Dylan Sims is another guy existing on the roster who we saw him in practice a little, kind of like the way he moved a bit. So there isn't a standout star there, but I think with Pfeiffer as the blocking tight end and then Lofton and Fox Flores possibly as the guys who step into the receiving tight end role, I think there's enough there.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, we'll see how much they end up using a tight end actually in the passing game. I know they did this year with Lakota Dupree, but they could always move away from that, especially with the quantity of receivers that they just got. All right, that's offense. You ready to move on to defense?
I am. All right. Really ready, Dave.
All right. Defensive line is the area that has upgraded, I think, most significantly on this team since the last we spoke. when we last talked, I want to say Aiden Gabara was in and Ryan McCullough were in, and maybe Amir Washington. I don't even think that, though.
And we didn't even, I can't remember if like Siali Tapaki had, we had officially taken him off the step chart by then.
We may not have. Keanu Williams may have still been on here. There, anyway, there's a lot that's changed. The big one, obviously, but I'm going to go through them all just to give them a quick list. Big one was Sahir West. But so in the edge rotation, since last we talked, we knew Aiden Gabara and Ryan McCullough. That was the JMU transfer and then the Cal transfer. But they've also added now the big JMU transfer, Sahir West, and then Utah Tech transfer, Dallin Hevea, who was originally, I think, a BYU player, went on his mission. I think he's one of those guys who's an older guy. So that's your edge rotation. And then at defensive tackle, they have added, since we last talked, I think all these guys, which is Amir Washington, Darold Dinyohi, from Rutgers, Tyson Ford from Cal, Maxwell Roy from Ohio State. And then I don't know if Gavin Blum was in yet, but Saddleback College is Gavin Blum. Where do you want to start here, Tracy? Edges or inside?
Yeah, let's start with edges because it's I think we can safely say it was an upgrade from last season.
Yeah, you think so? Because they actually have some?
Sahir West, yeah, he played in the Sun Belt. And but
he that picture was, we have of him in this freaking depth chart, Tracy.
Yeah,
like look how rocked out that dude is.
Yeah. And reports from his official visit is two different people. They use this word independently, and I don't think they shared notes. They just said, "Oh, by the way, Sahir West is a beast."
Do the thing with Brandon. Ask him about the guy who with the one guy. Remember the guy with the picture with the abs that kept getting posted on Bro, the recruit with the abs.
Okay, I will
do that to him and see what he comes back with. Because this picture kind of reminds
me. He was a recruit, right? No, yeah. Was he on the team?
I think he eventually ended up on the team, maybe, but recruit with the abs. Anyway, so Sahir West, huge pickup. UCLA did some awesome work here, beat out Ohio State and Texas A&M for him. And those schools, like just to put it, you know, kind of mildly, those schools wanted him. This wasn't a thing where like UCLA was bidding against itself or whatever. Like UCLA had to go and get this guy. And it, you know, all things being equal. Yeah. Sahir West would want to come to UCLA and be with his former coaches. But the keywords there are all things being equal. That's what UCLA was able to make happen here. So, Sahir West, huge pickup. So I will say a little bit more potential than production so far, if we're throwing a caveat out there.
Stan Jarvis McKay.
Ah, oh, God, Brandon, I love you so much.
How fast is that?
That was seconds.
And it took me, it took me a while to text that. I made some mistakes. So it was like 8 seconds.
That's incredible. He's an incredible man. But the thing with Sahir, 14 tackles for loss. Nobody's going to sneeze at that ever. 7 sacks. And yes, this was his first year playing. I think you can expect increased production even with the jump up in level based on like kind of my visual eval of him is that, yeah, that can play. That can play anywhere. Yeah. I want to put that caveat out there that, you know, it is a little bit more potential than production so far.
Yeah.
I like Dallin Hevea, the Utah Tech edge. You know, he produced at that level. I like that he's an older guy, more of a kind of an adult. Because if we learned anything, well, we learned one thing from Indiana this year. We learned many things from Indiana this year, but also they're old. You know, they're all like 23 year old plus. And when you combine that, you know, that BYU model of being old, but you also combine it with having some athleticism and some, you know, players, I think that's a model that can play. And Indiana's doing that. And, you know, adding a guy who's got some gravitas, some grizzle, I think that's good. But this edge rotation, just the I'm going to do a whole bunch of recaps of all this stuff. But I think when you look at production from these guys, even just last season, compared to what UCLA was producing from the edge spots this season, it's going to be wild. I think Sahir West by himself had more production than the entire edge rotation for UCLA last year.
Yeah. And then, you mentioned Aiden Gabara. I mean, we like him. He has P4 level potential. You know, he started out at Notre Dame. Ryan McCulloch is a guy that transferred from Cal, if anyone who knows him and knows his game, he was hurt for a while before he was hurt, really raves about him and thought he was projected to be a big contributor at Cal this year before he was hurt. We're not mentioning Scott Taylor, Cole Cogshell, Julius Walls. There was some young talent on the roster this last year. You said you were excited about the wide receivers. I think I'm excited about the edges. I want to get out to spring practice and watch these guys.
We're allowed to be excited about both.
Okay, good, good. Yeah. Or I can emphasize this and you emphasize.
There we go. But yeah, so this edge group, definite upgrade. Defensive tackle. So what they've added here, I would say, first, UCLA's let's start with what they had this year. UCLA's tackle play was not very good this year. We all had an impression of who we thought Keanu Williams is going to be and who we thought Sione Tapaki were going to be, and and Gary Smith for that matter. And the reality was Gary Smith and Keanu Williams were two guys coming off of very significant injuries. And I don't think they had fully shaken the injury off. They were not very mobile. They were both pluggers in there. And they didn't plug very well. They didn't look super strong in their lower halves, understandably, because Gary Smith was coming off a devastating ankle injury that we had heard at one time might lead to him retiring from football. And then Keanu was coming off an ACL injury. It's hard. Even for defensive linemen, even for guys who are constantly cutting on a, like a running back or a receiver, hard to come back from that stuff. Lower body stuff can take a long time. They weren't very good this year. So understand that when I'm saying, I think this is an upgrade, even though a guy like Maxwell Roy hasn't played really. He didn't play a ton at Ohio State this year, if at all. I do think they've upgraded talent, and then I think there's a chance for this to be a significantly upgraded group for next year.
Yeah, you make a really good point that while we might have a little bit of attachment to Pocky and Keanu Williams, they weren't, and Gary Smith, they just weren't very good this last year. They're okay. I mean, we've seen some pretty bad defensive tackle units over the years at UCLA. I'd say Keanu Williams started to play a little bit better as he got, I think, a little bit more time away from his injury. But if you plugged any of those guys in, what we would have liked is maybe to just see one of a veteran guy who's done it, who's played solidly at times. So losing all of them, that kind of left you without anyone, literally. The guys that were once highly rated guys that are coming in now are Tyson Ford, the transfer from Cal, and Maxwell Roy, the transfer from Ohio State. Tyson Ford, to me, where'd he start? Notre Dame?
Yes.
Where'd he start? Okay, started at Notre Dame, showed some promise, transferred to Cal, got hurt. I think that the talent is still there. He's now a redshirt junior. I don't think it's that much to expect solid play from him. Maxwell Roy is just, he's only going to be a redshirt freshman. He's an impressive prospect. I mean, as a prospect in high school, he was a four-star guy.
Well, but Tracy, he spent a year in college and now he's a three-star transfer. So
after, I mean, it's not like, what did you expect at Ohio State?
Yeah.
You know, that as a freshman, he was going to suddenly break that starting lineup. I mean, but a four-star. So, I mean, he might take some development because he's just going to be a redshirt freshman, but I can see Tyson Ford and Daryl Denyohe. They have a history with the staff.
Yes. He was with JMU in 2024 before transferring to Rutgers last year.
I think between those three guys and maybe Amir Washington and a guy who came back to UCLA and AJ Fuimaono, you might have you might be able to get a solid rotation. It's the biggest, one of the biggest question marks. I think offensive line still is. And it's kind of regrettable that the two lines are the biggest question marks. But to me, this is the one. I wouldn't be surprised if they weren't very good. And I wouldn't be surprised if Maxwell Roy and Tyson Ford were really good. So the biggest chance for a variable result here.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, there are still some pieces held over. We know that departed defensive coordinator Akaika Maloy was pretty high on AJ Fuimaono. So there's that.
Rotation guy last year.
Ashton Sanders was a back of the rotation guy last year. So there's that too. And then there were a couple of guys who were hurt all year. The true freshman, Tyler Partlow, Robert James III. They're both, at least as far as we know, back for next year. So there are some other guys in this depth chart. But yeah, this is the edge rotation. I think we can say definitively significant upgrade. Defensive tackle, I think I would lightly pencil in as a potential upgrade, but you know, I don't think it's a definitive thing at this point.
Yeah. I'm a little bit more skeptical on that because it's just that everyone's kind of unproven here. There are two guys that were former four stars with potential, but there's no real production from them yet. So
totally. Linebacker. So probably the last really big get from the portal, at least to date, happened, I think, just a couple of days ago. What is time, Tracy? Who knows when things happen? Oklahoma linebacker Sammy Omosigo coming in. So that's the big latest addition. But there were two other additions in the portal window. Drew Spinagatti, who's the JMU linebacker, and then Anthony Saka, who Notre Dame? God, I'm forgetting everything now.
Notre Dame
transfer Anthony Saka. Those three additions are the portal guys, and then there are freshmen Matthew Muisau and Malachi Soliatui, both coming in as well, joining the three holdovers or four holdovers, Mone Malifu, Jalen Woods, Donovan Pilott, and Ty Lee.
I'd say the thing here that really maybe we haven't emphasized enough, right, because we kind of didn't want to oversell it, but the late addition of Sammy Omosigo was huge.
Changed the complexion of this unit.
Take him out of this unit, and that's the biggest question mark on the team by far. Now, I don't want to oversell him. He was a sometime starter at Oklahoma, but when I watched him, I really liked him. He played a lot of Will. He played some Mike. He played both Mike and Will. I mean, just given the depth chart, you think he plugs in at Mike. A lot of experience, very savvy guy, very impressive looking dude. That was huge. That was a big late get for them, because this would have been kind of one of those linchpin things. If they didn't get him, you and I probably might be questioning this entire defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with his addition, I'm kind of tilting more towards a little bit of an upgrade, because again, if you were watching UCLA last year, linebacker aside from edges was maybe the worst part of the defense.
It just seemed like they didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah. And so like I'm not trying to denigrate players there, because I think a lot of that is just coaching, development, the whole thing. You add these guys into a competently run defense. Sammy Omazigo, I think, is probably more talented than anyone was on UCLA's linebacker corps last year, I would say. But you're also adding a culture guy in Drew Spinagati, who I think at linebacker especially, I think that's good to have. He's not the world-class athlete you would need to be at his size to be able to, I think, start at this level. But as a rotational guy and as a special teams guy, I think he's a nice piece to have. I'm intrigued by Anthony Saka, just kind of generally.
He's been billed to us by people we know as a bit of a tweener.
Yeah.
He might end up being a hands-down edge. I think one of the deals why he came to UCLA is they agreed to give him a shot at linebacker. So we'll see how that works out. He was talented, went to Notre Dame for a year, was recruited by a lot of big programs. So, yeah, I think what's
also he went to Notre Dame, Tracy, as a high 3-star 89. And sadly, after his first year at Notre Dame, he's now a 3-star 86.
Yeah. When you go to as an 89 to Notre Dame,
and you're supposed to start and get like 100 tackles or else you get downgraded.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. If you're a lower 4-star, a 90 or something, and you go to a top 10 program and you redshirt or play a little and don't have a huge impact, but you play, that's what a 4-star should project to be, a low 4-star going to an elite program.
Interesting.
I'd say also interesting, with some good coaching, I think there's potential for Jalen Woods and Donovan Pilote and Moni Malafu to be solid to good contributors next year.
We liked Malafu a lot.
We liked Malafu. There were times we liked Pilote. And Woods, you know, there's times he made some plays. There are other times it just seems like he was running off into the sunset and kind of wasn't. But there were some plays that he made that were exceptional.
Yep.
I'd like to see what these guys can do with another year and some good coaching.
Jalen Woods has played a lot of football now, too.
Yes, he's a redshirt senior next year.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys who played as a true freshman, played his four games or whatever. Like, he's played a lot of football.
And then there's Ty Lee, who we've never known what to do with.
Nope.
Big kid at 6'3", well, tall, but 6'3", 205. I wouldn't be surprised if somehow he gets moved around, maybe. And isn't necessarily a linebacker. He played a little last year, right?
Yeah, mostly on special teams, but yeah.
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 Now we're moving on, Dave, to why I think is the, if we're going to lump them together of cornerback and safety, the secondary, strongest unit on the team.
Let's talk safeties and nickels first. Okay. Because I think I don't even know what to do with this depth chart because
it's nice.
So there's other positions where we're kind of like squinting because they're adding non-starters. Like they added Tau Johnson to Sean James, retained Cole Martin and Scooter Jackson, and added DJ Barksdale. What do you do with that?
Because let's just say Tau Johnson
is a starter and a very, very good player who might be an NFL player.
Top three or four guys that UCLA got in this this transfer portal cycle.
Yes.
He's a player, dude.
Yeah.
He is good. You have to immediately say he's a starter at safety.
Yes.
Scooter Jackson was probably UCLA's best all around defensive player.
He was up there.
Yeah. He played a lot of nickel. They're bringing in DJ Barksdale, undersized guy who played nickel at JMU, but man, he knows how to play. I watched a lot of him. And I wanted to just be skeptical, you know, do that thing. I'm a P4 snob. Can you actually play at this level? And I started to believe he could. And I believe he can. So that's all pretty impressive. They return Cole Martin, who really started to play well toward the end of last season. And then you did your research on Tayshaun James.
Yeah. Iowa State, safety who's played a lot of football the last 2 years. I mean, he was limited by injury this year, but I mean, this is a guy who's been a, at worst, rotational third safety for Iowa State, which is historically a very good defensive program. Highly productive. We had him initially slotted in to absolutely start, and then they picked up Tao Johnson. And so he's the one where I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what to do with that because he's played really well. I would say he's almost slightly more proven than Cole Martin. And we liked Cole Martin this year, but it's an interesting situation. Like they've got some pieces in this safety group where there's going to be heavy and I think kind of crazy competition in the spring.
And we haven't talked about Malik Hartford.
No, who's, from a high school rating standpoint, the most heralded guy in this group. He was a former extremely high 4-star. He was rated a 96 out of high school.
And if you play as a backup, but play solidly on an NFL team, which is Ohio State, that goes a long way.
Yeah. And what he ran into is the unfortunate reality that Nick Saban retired and Caleb Downs ended up at Ohio State. And so he ended up behind him. And Caleb Downs is maybe the best player in college football. But Malik Hartford, his career trajectory at that point was that, oh, he might end up being their next starter, as I believe it was a true sophomore at that point. But it didn't end up happening. And then he was a backup. And then he was a backup this year and elected to redshirt. So he's a redshirt junior who had a pretty good trajectory after his true freshman year. And then that got disrupted because of talent acquisition stuff at Ohio State. Backed up the last 2 years, but very talented player still. Like it's not like the talent completely went away. It's not like he's a complete bust out who hasn't played college football. He played for Ohio State. He just wasn't better than Caleb Downs. That's okay.
That's an impressive group, I'm telling you. Okay, let's be a little critical. Maybe there isn't great depth. I mean, they're probably.
I don't know. How many safeties do you need?
They're probably too deep at each. I mean, they've got Jaden Hudson, who we're kind of curious about last year after watching him look more like a linebacker.
Realistically, you play five. Like you're not playing a ton of.
Yeah, I just always look at it from an injury standpoint. Like a couple of guys, what happens? A couple of guys get hurt, but I mean that I'm trying to come up with something critical, Dave, and that's about it. I mean, I like this. I really like this group. I did not like watching UCLA football last year. I liked watching Scooter Jackson play.
Same. Yeah, the secondary was like the big bright spot of all of last year.
Speaking of which, we're moving on to cornerback.
Let's do it.
Roderick Pleasant was one of the – what, Dave? I'm a really bad – one of the pleasant surprises of the whole season. He really was until he got hurt. When did he get hurt?
Last couple games.
Yeah. I mean, there aren't UCLA's had some solid cornerbacks the last few years, but not a guy who played consistently, but then flashed some real high end talent like Roderick Pleasant did last year. So really high on him. They also brought in Dante Lovett. Mm-hmm. Jace McMillan and Osiris Gilbert. Dante Lovett of Virginia Tech, to me, he slots right in as a starter. If you're talking about who they lost last year from cornerback and Dante Lovett, might be an upgrade. At least it's even, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I like that. I don't think it's any worse than last year. If not, it's at least as good, if not better. It still returns Robert Stafford, who started some games for UCLA last year. And then they got Jace McMillan, who was Montana State star, made a lot of headlines over this play. And then, Osiris Gilbert is a longer term depth guy who could have some talent, local kid who could end up, competing in,
Did you go Osiris?
I don't know, Osiris maybe?
We got to go Osiris.
I've heard it twice. There were two basketball – this is so funny. About 10 years ago, there were two basketball prospects with this name. And I walked up to one and said, hey, Osiris. He goes, it's Osiris. I go, oh, okay. Then I walked up to the other one and I said, Osiris. He goes, it's Osiris. So I don't know. You can pronounce their names. They can pronounce their own names any way they damn well want. The thing about this too, when we're talking depth, just from a body standpoint, they got 10 guys at both at the cornerback spots. I think some of these guys might end up providing depth at safety. Kerryon Jabari came in as a true freshman last year. He's still with the team. I saw him a couple of times as a prospect. I liked him as a potential safety. Smooth, a good athlete, not super, super quick twitch to be a cornerback, but really liked him as a safety. So I'm thinking there might be some guys who move to safety to fill out that depth chart and the future at safety. But okay, Dante Lovett, Roderick Pleasant, starters at cornerback, and then Scooter Jackson, Teo Johnson, Cole Martin, starters at safety and nickel, with possibly Tayshaun James. Best unit on the team, I think.
Yeah. Yep. The secondary is going to, I'd be surprised if it isn't good.
And let's just thank me. Thank Demetrius Martin.
He loaded this thing up.
Well, he did really well at recruiting. I'm going to give him.
Give him flowers.
We've known Meat for how long?
When he's it's 16, almost 15 years now. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've always liked Meat. We're talking about Demetrius Martin. He came last year as the secondary coach, brought in a ton of guys, had them all compete, came up with the strongest unit on defense, probably strongest unit on the team, and left us some guys. Not only did he leave us Roderick Pleasant and Scooter Jackson, who he very well could have taken ASU with him, he left us his born son, which is so nice of him to do. So yeah, his Meat will always be like one of the all-star coaches, UCLA assistant coaches in my book. And yeah. I mean, arguably came up with Fours Up, right?
Played a role.
Okay.
It was,
and the boom thing too. He did the boom.
I have to give the flowers where they're appropriate. It was an Ed Lewis invention. It's the funniest, and it's the funniest.
Was it really? I thought it was.
No, it is absolutely Ed Lewis, and it's okay. The funniest legacy in the entire history of the world that Ed Lewis. They are still doing the Fours Up because Ed Lewis did that with Jaleel Wadood.
Ed Lewis was a prospect. It's tall, gangly, blonde.
He was a prospect.
Punter. No.
Yeah. A punter prospect, but a prospect nonetheless.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's the transfer portal.
Specialists.
Oh God.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we're just
always with you with the specialists. Always with you.
I don't know why. They got a couple of transfer punters after losing Will Carroll, their starting punter. We'll see if they can get a starter out of that. Chase Berry returns. I don't think he was starter level when he was at UCLA, but he was the first string holder.
Which yeah, I think it's going to be a good note. Curtis Gerund or Gerund or whatever. The Sam Houston punter. He actually was the starting punter for Sam Houston as a true freshman. He's an Aussie, as everyone is these days.
Okay, I haven't looked. Does he do the Aussie style where he walks, goes to the side and kicks it like a line drive?
I'll be honest with you, Tracy.
You don't either.
I have not watched.
Okay, I get to watch.
I've not been breaking down punter film.
Okay.
But
and then they got their I mean, I'd call him a semi-star place kicker and Mateen Bagani back. Very consistent, very good. And they're very good long snapper who both came back into the fold. So
there'll be a heated long snapping competition this spring, though.
And what will also be heated is the kickoff and punt return. They got some guys who were that last year.
We still have Mikey Matthews listed for both.
We do because we don't know. It's the craziest thing. You can't predict, you know, you'd think Wayne Knight is going to get a look there. You think Samaj Morgan will get a look there. I think there are a number of other guys who were there.
Aiden Mizell.
There you go. I mean, that's going to be exciting. And whenever we're usually at practice, we really get to look at the kickoff and punt returns Dave.
We do.
We do a great job on those, don't we?
We can really crush those. I'm hoping it's a new
era with our friend Bob the Builder.
Bob the Builder. All right. Well, we're an hour and 10 minutes in, and we haven't talked about the other sport at UCLA.
Women's basketball.
The UCLA women's basketball team just finished up its road trip. They went to Minnesota and Nebraska, pretty much crushed Nebraska on Sunday, and then had a tougher game against Minnesota, largely because of, I would say, some questionable officiating. But I do want to give Minnesota some credit. They are a good defensive team, and they made UCLA work for their 76 points in a way that I think is good for UCLA to both fight through that and fight through the continued, you know, if you're still not watching women's basketball, you know, whatever. But I will say this. You might complain about men's college basketball officiating. It's nothing in it. Nowhere close to the insanity, the pure capriciousness, the absolute avant-garde horror that is women's college basketball refereeing. It is insane. Absolutely bonkers.
It's so bad. Like, I still care about college football officiating and college basketball officiating to where I don't care. You gotta let it go. You have to not care, or
you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so bad. But anyway, they fought through that. I mean, whatever. They won both these games by, I mean, they won the Minnesota game by 18 and the Nebraska game by 22.
If the thing about this team is you have, you know, the biggest difference making player in UCLA women's basketball in years and years and years, and Lauren Betts, their 6'7" post. And with her, they went out, Corey Close went out and found the surrounding cast for her that fits really well. And so not only did they recognize the players, they did good scouting, recognize the players to bring in. With the personnel they have, they play the way they should to match their personnel. They try to get the ball in. Lauren Betts they are always trying to get over a touch. She's working to get a touch. Minnesota at times triple teamed her. And all of them are good at entry passes, from Charlize Leger Walker to Kiki Rice, even Gianna Neepkins, who's their designated shooter, and Gabby Hawkes. I mean, they are all good post entry passers. They do a high low stuff, which is fun to watch with Angela Dugleish. If you had that personnel and you'd say, this is what I want to do, they're trying to execute it. And if they fail, I'm okay with it, because they're trying to do what you would want to do, which makes it great. Their defense sometimes is really good, really fun to watch. Like we've said before, the only thing sometimes is they get out to run, which is good. They like to run. They turn the ball over a little bit too much at times, but turnovers are down this year. So it's a really, why it's fulfilling to watch UCLA women's basketball is they have great talent and they're doing it right given the talent. And just watching, seriously, Kiki Rice really makes it for me, because she is a real athlete. She's explosive, and if you're looking for like someone who's got a burst, and that's Kiki Rice. And she's gotten better. She was injured in the offseason. She went through surgery. Usually people come back, she's a bit leaner and quicker, incredibly. So I like this team a lot. I look forward to watching them.
Yeah. No, it's been an exceptional season, and I would say they look like a more consistent and possibly better version of the team last year. And that team,
I mean, right now they're in first place in the Big Ten. I didn't check to see. I will right now. Yeah, Iowa won their game. That's right. So the Iowa and UCLA are both 6-0 and atop the conference standings. So So really fun to, they're 16-1 if you didn't know. So there you go. And they play Iowa coming up on February 1st. Should be a great game. It's at Pauley Pavilion.
Maryland this weekend is something to watch. They're pretty good.
Ranked 12th in the country.
They're pretty good. Bart Torvik has them as a top 10 team. They are the highest ranked team the UCLA will play until Michigan in February. They're tough. That should be a good game. That's also at Pauley this weekend, or it's tomorrow actually. I think there's some good home games coming up. Between that, I mean, Purdue's not very good. And then they go on the road again, and then it's Iowa at home. But like those two games will be fun to watch.
And here's the thing: if you want to go watch UCLA basketball at an affordable price,
this is absolutely this is the absolute one to do.
This is it. Because they're, I don't know if anyone's checked for the UCLA Purdue game, like down in that lower bowl, Dave.
Yeah.
Have you checked prices?
Not good.
$400 bucks.
Hey, let's give a shout. Men of Western ticket opportunity for the Purdue game. That's a little transition.
That was a good transition.
Yeah. Dave. You like that?
Yeah.
I'll just read. Men of Western is excited to offer Bruin fans the opportunity to request upper level seats to UCLA's big time matchup next Tuesday, January 20th versus number 5 Purdue. Fans will be sent one ticket per $25 donation to the Men of Westwood. So you send $50 to Men of Westwood, you get two tickets. And there's also John Wooden bobblehead that day. 7,500 first 7,500 fans.
They let you in an hour before the game. So if you want one, you should probably be lined up right then.
Yeah. We've got the details posted on the message board. So get in there and do it.
Special shout out, though, to Ken Graywer, champion of Westwood. Hey, that's the organization. But Ken Graywer is the champion of Westwood.
He's the champion of Westwood.
I mean, the dude has been... now is back involved with NIL for football. The ability to sign 41 transfers, has a lot to do with NIL. Ken's doing a great job now with football, as he's been doing with basketball. So much behind the scenes, so much going on that is really the credit of Kenny Graywer. And he's just doing it all out of the goodness of his heart. I think he's got to be just guzzling anxiety drugs.
Probably.
Yeah. I don't think he does, but he should. He deserves it. He's doing amazing work.
Not take my medical advice, everyone.
Yeah. So men's basketball team.
The men's basketball team has continued to play basketball.
We're a little disappointed.
That they've continued.
in the play, Dave.
They played Maryland on Saturday, and they played Penn State on Wednesday. They won both games. I will say, if they didn't win both of these games, that would have been nightmare fuel for the rest of the season. Maryland is the second worst team in the Big Ten. Penn State is the third worst.
I'm gonna do this though.
Yeah,
I'm gonna pull some optimistic little things out of this. I think early on when we got a look and got I think coming out of a practice that we saw, we kind of speculated how long would it take for Steven Jamerson to get most of the minutes at the post. It's taken a while. But I think we're there. I really would like to have considered whether if Seaman Jamerson had gotten more minutes early on, where this team would be, because he's getting more and more comfortable as he plays more minutes.
You think we're there? That's so interesting to me.
No, because I think he's going to get more and more. He played how many? 23?
He had 24 in the last two games. But
he was in foul trouble.
May I direct your attention?
Yes.
To early December. They played Washington and Oregon. They won both of these games. Steven Jamerson played a total of 39 minutes across the two games. How many did he play the next game against Gonzaga?
Zero.
Six.
I know they went, he went into a lull of minutes. He got a little bit in the doghouse. I would have liked to see him play through it all and where he would be now. But regardless of that, I think that's that we're seeing, that's the way it's going. He's playing more minutes than Xavier Booker. Xavier Booker still might start, but recently he's playing more. He brings a great, an element that's needed to this team. And I think as he plays more, we will see them play better basketball. We saw Trent Perry with, he's had like a couple of games that were pretty good, but this was his singular breakout game, scored 30 points and just looked, his shot is, was beautiful and just looked almost like he can do what he wants. When he passes the ball, it's almost like I'm going to pass up the ability to go to the hoop, which is great for him because he's shooting something ridiculous. He's shooting 81% from free, and that's not even as good as he can be. His emergence is interesting. Donovan Dent was starting to be Donovan Dent, and now he wasn't. We heard he was a little sick, but he also got hit in the head or dinged up again in this last game. So interesting what's going to happen with him. I would expect Sky Clark to come back.
I think Mick said he was still doubtful for this weekend.
Yeah, I think doubtful is that word that you throw out there because you don't want to, you think you're keeping some advantage from your opposition.
He's a cagey fellow, that Mickey.
I'm going to give Tyler Bilodeau a lot of credit. We've been not great Tyler Bilodeau fans, and he's still not great on defense. He's a little bit better. He's decent as a post defender.
If he wants to be automatic from the field like he's been for almost this entire year, I frankly don't care.
See, that's the thing. He's gone from inconsistent to consistent offensive player. Even when he's like in the first half, he's not scoring or shooting. He comes on in the second half. Yep. And you know, chalk that up to maturity. He's averaging 17.7 points. And he's consistently bringing it. He is that guy when you need a basket who will, when he catches it at 10 feet, you're pretty confident it's going to go in. I think there's the makings of a team to be probably more competitive than we just thought a week ago with those elements. Still worried about Eric Daly. It's really a curiosity to me. Like we said last year, midseason, he was the MVP of this team. And now he'll play okay, and then he'll disappear the next game. I don't think that is that big of a deal, actually. I think if Steven Jamerson can play and keep playing the way he is, and Tyler Bilodeau keeps playing the way he is, Sky Clark comes back, and Trent Perry steps up, I wouldn't mind seeing a three-guard lineup with Steven Jamerson and Bilodeau. That might be the way forward for me. So I'm trying to be – I'm not just trying to be optimistic, Dave. There were a little bit of signs. We can't deny the signs of Bilodeau's consistency, Trent Perry's emergence, and Steven Jamerson playing himself into more minutes.
Yeah. Daly is one for his last 14, 15, 18, 22. He's one for his last 22 from three-point land.
That's crazy. He's a much better shooter than that.
One for his last 22, which means he was at one time 12 for 27 on the year.
Remember, 12 for 27. So let's say that's 40 something. He is now on the season shooting 26.5%.
Yeah.
There's something going on there. Yep. He's down from last year.
Considerably. He's down in a lot of categories. He's not as being, oddly, because my visual impression is that he's been too assertive at times. He's using fewer possessions. He's taking fewer shots. He's shooting it worse. He's offensive rebounding worse. He's defensive rebounding better. His assist rate is worse. His turnover rate is worse. His steal rate is worse.
Just he's a good catch and shooter, and that's what he should be. He's trying to put the ball on the floor to be a small forward, and he should just be a face-up four who guards a three.
Yeah.
Because Tyler Bilodeau is going inside. He just needs to catch from the outside and shoot the ball. Because he's a good shooter from beyond the three when he catches and shoot, and from within the three-point line, you know, at 15 feet, he's pretty accurate. So I'm not even going to throw that in as a possibility that that could turn around, because it's just too uncertain.
Yeah.
But we've bizarre. Seen what he can do. And if he can turn that around, wow. But I'm thinking there are those other three elements, you know, could give UCLA a boost toward the end of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. That's it. I'm done.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Yeah.
That's what she said. I knew that was going to be said.
Yep. I said it under my breath, though. Nobody heard it.
Everyone heard it.
Everyone heard it. All right. For Tracy Pearson. Look, I'm ashamed of myself, okay? For Tracy Pearson, I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online, and we will talk to you again next time.
Have a good weekend, guys.